new CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got
him. Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome to Inside the Tunnel, brought to you by VG Scoop 24-7 Sports. My name is Andrew Alex. And would you look at this? Joined today for the first time in like 2 months, more than that, really. We got like two-thirds of the full gang. I guess I've seen plenty of Evan G. Watkins. He is unavailable. He is being a dad. But Matasis, Doug Bowman, here with me. Fellas, what's going on?
Not too much. Got a full off-season of rest. Worked on some stuff. Didn't get in the weight room. We're doing well.
Matei?
Doing well here. As Doug mentioned, you know, had a nice little off season. Didn't discuss too much ball on here for our men's team. Not a lot of great things this year. Probably locks, though, for the NIT tournament. So maybe we'll do some additional podcasts on that. But otherwise, excited to start the turn for the next season with spring ball coming up.
You getting excited for the NIT, Matei? Committing us to NIT podcasts?
You got to be excited for something in this offseason. So NIT ball is better than what? CIT ball? There's levels to it.
There, it is better than that, yes.
It's the CIT. There's the...
Is the CBI
CBA,
still a thing?
CBI, CBA. You got to pay to be in that one.
Though. Yeah.
That's tough. That's tough. But hey, mid-majors...
Should they spend some NIL money to be in this CIT or whatever?
I don't think the schools that go to the CIT do much by way of NIL money. But subscribers to VT Scoop do have an opportunity to read Doug Bowman's play-by-play breakdown of Eric Strickland's MVP in the 1999 NIT for Nebraska.
Wow.
You're not going to want to miss that one. Eric Strickland, a personal friend of mine.
Oh. A Lincoln legend.
Yeah. I mean, that's the guy whose radio show I go on in Lincoln.
You're still going on that radio show?
All the time.
Like during the offseason?
Not as much during the offseason. During the offseason, it's more of a like, Strick will text me and say, hey, you want to come on and talk ACC hoops? I'm like, if you're sure that's what your listeners want to hear about. Yeah, we got four teams going to the NCAA tournament this year. But
since the end of Tech football, have you done more Nebraska radio hits or more Inside the Tunnel podcasts?
Well, I've done a ton of Inside the Tunnel podcasts if you count the interviews.
Those count.
Yeah, I've done more than one a week, probably.
Could be a good segue into plugging some of those podcasts.
I can't even remember off the top of my head what they all are. But look, if you're on this podcast, I'm sure have the cognitive ability to scroll backwards through the log and see a ton of interviews. Montavious Cunningham, Brent Pry, and ESPN.
There we just go. To name a there few he folks. Is.
Here we come on. Come on, Doug. You know, I'm a professional.
I just had to get you going.
But yeah, all great content. So if you're sitting around in your home, scratching yourself, itching for Hokie football content, we got plenty in the log. Check it out. And read Doug Bowman's article about what sound bites will be provided to NCAA 25 from Virginia Tech. That was an eye-opener for, I don't even want to know how many hits that article got.
I guess Doug broke some news this offseason. He got ahead of the curve for, NCAA 25 before Virginia Tech came out with the release, and then the coaching salaries as well. So, insider Doug.
Well, I don't know about that. The Freedom of Information Act is a wonderful law on the books of our country.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, there are days in a man's life where your life has changed and you might not even know it. And whatever day the Freedom of Information Act was passed, Doug's life was changed for the better.
It's huge.
I guess that was July 5th, 1967.
Wow. After July, July 4th legislation must have been a big moment.
Yeah. I mean, it just a lot of people to thank if you're Doug Bowman. And we're going to assume that most of those people are dead.
you got the sponsor of that bill?
I'm trying to figure it out right now. This looks like it might have been one of those bills that
Mitch McConnell?
Got changed so many times that it might not even have had a formal sponsor by the time it got passed. But
McConnell and Biden did it. Yeah. It was bipartisan.
So I was saying, homeboys wrote that.
All right, we shouldn't go down that road.
I mean, we're just calling them old. It's okay. Either way, let's get into things. Spring practice coming up, folks. Very exciting stuff. And Doug Bowman has come here to tell you exactly not only what the position battles are going to be, but how they're going to play out. He's Nostradamusing this thing. So we're going to go position by position. A lot of certainty, but also some uncertainty about this. And I think we'll start on the offensive line because that's where things might get mixed up a little bit. That's where the offensive coaching staff is going to have the opportunity to get creative. Obviously, we know Montavious Cunningham coming into the fold. Maybe some guys coming up on the depth chart from behind. Even potentially, I guess this doesn't apply to our spring practice because we're talking about after spring practice at this point. More guys coming into the fold after the spring. So, Doug, looking at those five guys up front, how do you see things shaking out?
I know Ron Crook talked during the media availability they had a couple weeks ago that he's like all the other offensive line coaches that love to talk about how he shuffles the deck. So I think you're going to see a lot of talk of positional versatility and trying to find the top five, the best five guys, no matter position, kind of throw out the positions that they played last year. I think that will be the talk, but I kind of think it's most likely to stay fairly similar with Xavier Chaplin at left tackle, Braylon Moore, Caden Moore, and Parker Clements. I think the one spot that you look at is the right guard spot. Is if you're just thinking in terms of most likely change or things that Crook might tinker with, and especially to insert Montavious Cunningham somewhere, probably right guard where they were already rotating a little bit at the end of last year is a prime target for that. You know, maybe they do some shifting with Caden Moore and Braylon Moore. I know I saw that Braylon Moore has been working on snaps, whether that's just shuffling the deck like Ron Crook was talking about or legitimately an option in terms of him sliding over there full time. We'll find that out this spring, but as far as my Nostradamus prediction, I'm going to take the simplest, most likely outcome is the four guys that have been there stay in their spot. And the one spot, the right guard spot that they tinkered with all of last season is where Cunningham slides in.
I think it's interesting too, because we heard really good things about Johnny Garrett. I know he's getting a lot more looks in terms of bowl practice. I think he played a little bit against Tulane in the bowl game. You also have a guy like Brody Meadows who's waiting back there. He had some, you know, extended action last season as a reserve guy. I think ideally, like, I agree with Doug, experience is a huge thing. Like, the rest of the offense, when you look outside the offensive line, is pretty set in stone, pretty experienced. Like, you don't want to change things up too much to the point where all of a sudden you're taking things away from Kyron Drones or, you know, taking time away from him to make passes to those wide receivers or even, you know, Bashaul Tuten, who's now built a rapport with some of these guys on the offensive line. At the same time, I think there is a little bit of concern when you say, okay, we have Braylon Moore at left guard. He's 6'1", 6'2". If you move Cunningham inside, I know there's been many reports about him, his versatility, long arms, a guy that can slide outside. Ideally, he's inside. But you are smaller on the interior of the offensive line. I think in an ideal world, like Braylon Moore would play center, which can kind of mask, you know, that lack of physical stature. And I think Caden Moore just played so much better as a left guard in the past. He seems like you know, is more natural for him to play that position. I'm excited to see what they do with the right side of the offensive line. I think, you know, the left side is pretty set in stone. I think you could see a guy like Montavious Cunningham potentially play right tackle if they decide that's an upgrade over Parker Clements. And then, you know, if you want to move him inside, I think there could be a very legitimate battle between a guy like Johnny Garrett or Parker Clements. So I'm excited to see what happens on the right side of the line. I think that's where you should be looking in terms of positional battles for the spring. But overall, I mean, we mentioned what, 7-8 guys. There's going to be a lot of rotation there. So excited to see how it kind of all shakes out.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more depth there than the last 2 years where we were talking about trying to find a fifth guy or a sixth guy. I think we've talked, you know, you mentioned Garrett and Meadows and Cunningham along with the guys returning from last year gives you 8 alone. And that's before like a guy like Leif Ganim, who they dressed and played a little bit last year. Lance Williams, the overall room is in a lot better shape and a lot deeper than it's been in at least 2 years, maybe even longer than that, in terms of experience coming back. And then there's some good young prospects that seem to be kind of knocking on the door a little bit to get in the mix.
One thing that has not been covered on the podcast, Clayton Frady, no longer with the program. So not all gains on the offensive line for Virginia Tech, but I think we're looking at net gains more than anything. And I think the Hokies still very much in the clear in that regard. Shout out to Gardner Webb Football, which I will be attending a Gardner Webb Football game this year, but not rooting for them as they'll be facing off against Chase Mumma's Tennessee Tech team.
Oh, big
that
one.
Game, for anyone else who's interested, going to take place on the Saturday following Virginia Tech's Thursday night game or Thursday or Friday night game against Miami. So you won't have to miss Tech in order
Where's Tennessee Tech? Where's Gardner Webb? Gardner Webb's in South Carolina, right?
Gardner Webb is in, it's like 30 Tennessee. Minutes away from Charlotte. I think it's still in North Carolina, but it's in some direction. I don't know.
What about Tennessee Tech?
East Tennessee somewhere. Homeboy hasn't even unpacked his bags yet, and he's already on the road recruiting. That's how it works, baby. Safeties coach. Come on.
It's in Cookeville, Tennessee.
Cookeville. I envision a lot of trips to Cookeville in my future. Moving on, though. Tight end position. Benji Gosnell.
Cookeville's 6 hours from Charlotte.
So not necessarily right next door, but I don't know. I'll fly private. Give me some time.
All right.
See if I can get on the Tennessee Tech recruiting jet, if such a thing exists.
It's called Delta.
Yeah, so Benji Gosnell leading the pack. We know Nick Gallo returning after a season-ending injury. Daquan Wright no longer with the program. How does this battle look at the tight end position, boys?
It looks thin. I mean, this is probably the thinnest position. I mean, Virginia Tech would have loved to bring on someone, you know, like this is, I know you were mentioning, like maybe they bring in a guy on the offensive line after the spring. To me, this is the position that if you're going to bring someone in, like you want a little bit of seasoned, you know, whether it's a blocking type or a receiver type. Losing Daquan Wright hurts, but you really got 3 guys, and one of those guys you haven't seen play in over a year. We don't know the status of Nick Gallo. You can assume like he's fully healthy. He's training now. He's a part of, you know, the winter workouts and everything, but he hasn't, you know, played up to game speed in over a year. And that is a little concerning. I think we saw in the bowl game, actually a nice combination of Benji Gosnell and Harrison St. Germain. I know they had like a little trick play in the rain to St. Germain to get that touchdown. I think Gosnell also had a touchdown catch in that game. So after all season without, you know, tight ends receiving any touchdowns, 2 in the bowl game was pretty big. So big for their development. But overall, I mean, it's a thin room. if everyone can play up to their potential, like you feel pretty good there. If everyone can stay healthy, you feel pretty good. But this is definitely a positional group where I think, you know, if you have room to add, definitely would be a good, you know, place to look.
Yeah, it's, I feel like if they get to the season, if they get to the fall healthy, they'll feel all right about it. Gallo and Evans reported that Gosnell had a little clean up something after the season, so they'll both be limited in the spring. But like by the time you get through most of the spring, the summer, and a full fall camp, if those two guys are healthy, I think, you know, those are your de facto starters who probably split a lot of time, and you're comfortable there. But that's not a certainty by any stretch. Gallo coming off a big injury, Gosnell's had his own big injuries, and then Harrison St. Germain and Zeke Wimbush behind them. So I think it would be an interesting thing to look at in terms of could they. Tech's gonna be pretty tight, I feel like, on scholarship when in the portal in the post spring window, depending on obviously what happens with their own roster. But you know, that's I think Gosnell is trending in the right direction based on last season. Gallo is what he is at this point. So if you can add a little more playmaking ability there, I think you would take a pretty long look at that as kind of like the final piece of the skill positions on offense, a kind of a Daquan Wright level receiver, particularly at the position.
I want to backtrack just a little bit here. We talked about the possibility of bringing in someone on the offensive line. Do you fear with that group any potential attrition following the spring?
The offensive line?
Yes, sir.
I think with a offensive line, you're going to have is one of the positions with the most scholarship players allocated on the team. What's that? 1, 2, probably there's at least 10 right now. Just trying to go through the roster. With more coming, like I think there's always potential for that, especially with, you know, with those numbers alone. But you know, you look at, and if you look at the roster, guys like Chaplin and Braylon Moore, have multiple years left. I think Cunningham has multiple years left. So there's, if starting positions get locked down again with those guys, like you may see some guys see the writing on the wall and be like, I don't have playing time available for 2 years. So that post spring window feels like it's going to be active in terms of probably the second level players, like the younger players on any roster who, you know, maybe they didn't feel comfortable entering the portal after a redshirt year following the fall where, you know, they don't have, number one, they wanted to give themselves a chance at their school. And number two, they don't really have that much film from the scout team to like sell. So maybe, you know, they're betting on themselves in the spring and getting 15 more practices of practice film to take to the portal. So I think you'll see that be a little more active on the lower end, on the younger end of the roster.
Okay, anything else to add before we move along here?
Nothing else to add.
Okay, I guess let's go to the gunslinger here. For the first time in a long time, Virginia Tech goes into the spring, the fall, what have you, absolutely knowing who their starting quarterback is going to be. And boy, does that feel good, especially when
first time since Michael Brewer.
Yeah, I mean, really and truly, first time since Michael Brewer.
I guess Willis, kind of, but.
Does Josh Jackson count or no?
Was that, I kind of feel, no, like I remember a Willis question there.
Yeah, no, there was always,
that's true.
You know, whether it was legitimate or not, they would go out and say there's a legitimate quarterback competition here. And they did that with Jackson and Evans, and then Willis and Jackson, then Willis and Jackson again. And then I guess after that, it was Hooker and
Burmeister, Patterson, and
yeah, oh my gosh, it's either way. The fact that we're getting exasperated just recalling it.
Well, I guess 2021 with Burmeister, there's literally nobody else on the Knox Kadem, right?
Blumreich.
Yeah, don't forget Blumreich.
I forgot. Yeah, the top. What was he? Come the top on,
Doug.
20 player or something?
Get Doug out of this podcast room right now.
Wasn't he a top 20 receiver? What was the quote?
He was a top 20 player, but that was 2022.
Oh, okay.
That was the current coaching staff. Either way, like I was saying, that's not the problem right now. But the backup quarterback position is a much bigger question. Little birdies, sources, whatever you want to call them, tell me this Virginia Tech team would have been very happy to have Grant Wells come back as the backup for one final year of eligibility, which he did have. Grant Wells wants to move on with his life, respect to him, but now you don't have any experience behind Kyren Drones. With the guys in that room, gentlemen, who do you believe emerges as QB2?
Pop Watson's got to be the heavy leader in the clubhouse as the guy that beat Dylan Whitke out last year, and enough to get, he had a handful of snaps and garbage time last year. Got suspended during the year too. So there's that development to occur kind of off the field too, as well as on the field. So I think Watson's the clear leader in the clubhouse. I don't know whether, no matter who it is among those two, they get to a point where they're like completely comfortable. But I also don't know that like adding a transfer quarterback over the summer post spring, but before, like, I don't know how easy that's going to be to add a backup who not only is willing to be a backup quarterback behind Kyren Drones, but is going to be able to pick up the offense and like be ready to go as a good backup quarterback. So it's going to be an interesting decision after the spring, once Watson and Whitke sorts itself out of where they're going with the portal following the spring practice.
Yeah. I mean, my thought process on that in terms of potentially bringing a transfer in, for all the reasons that you just said of who would even be willing to do it, come basically sign up to sit behind a guy who's coming into the 2024 season with a lot of hype. Tom Fornelli says number 8 quarterback in the country. That burned the internet on fire today. But even still, if you even feel like you have to go do that, that would be a serious indictment on the development of the two aforementioned guys currently on the roster.
The other thing is, I don't know how much better you're going to get than Pop Watson out of the portal, Watson or Whitke, whoever, out of the portal at that point. Like, the guys transferring are not good enough to start at their current schools. You're coming in on a really compressed timeline. No matter who is behind Kyren Drones, if Kyren Drones is not playing quarterback this fall, Tech is taking a significant step back, whether it's Watson, Whitke, or insert transfer portal quarterback. So I kind of think if like Watson or Whitke show progress and develop even like a little bit, like you just keep rolling with them and just acknowledge that if the worst case scenario happens where you have to play them a lot in 2024, the season's just not going to be what you thought it was. That's probably going to be the case with either the current quarterbacks or anybody you're able to get out of the portal. Like, it's just going to be a worse team without Drones at quarterback, no matter who's playing quarterback at that point.
Yeah, and one more point I want to make. Obviously, last year with Grant Wells getting hurt, I know they kind of like puppeteered him out there on the practice field, in front of the media before some of the games. Like, I saw him there at Rutgers, could barely move. But like during that time, it was Pop Watson basically acting as the number 2 quarterback for much of the season. Like, I know Grant Wells came back late, played a couple snaps in some games, but he has that experience under his belt, like at least preparing to be the number two quarterback as a true freshman. Like the biggest thing was preserve him at all costs, get him the red shirt, get him some more time. But I kind of agree, like the pros don't seem to outweigh the cons of bringing someone else in. Like the indictment on Pop Watson is, you know, he's a freshman. He came in last year. Like he needs to physically be ready to handle the type of offense that Virginia Tech wants to run. If you're bringing in, someone else, one, he's probably not going to be that good, as you mentioned. And then two, you're further pissing off the guys on the roster that, you know, you hope are the succession plan to Kyron Drones whenever he leaves. So I think Pop Watson's a pretty safe bet just with his experience. We'll see if Dylan Whitkey can make it, you know, interesting, but I don't see them outsourcing for that position whatsoever.
Yeah, the other thing is the scholarship numbers are going to be tight in the portal. They're four over. We've already talked about potentially an offensive lineman and a tight end, now a quarterback. There's probably some help at safety and a nickel that could be like on your shopping list. So there's five spots right there. So like, is adding a backup quarterback over another safety or another nickel or any of the other spots that you may identify? Like, it'll just be interesting to watch, see the priority list of like how they're weighing the importance of one position over the other when the spots are going to be extremely limited.
Yeah, to your point, to like make it tangible, like all those other positions you mentioned, offensive line, probably like a 6 out of 10, like a tight end of a 4 or 5 out of 10. I'd put QB all the way bottom of the list at like a 2 out of 10. Like, obviously, you want to be prepared in case anyone gets hurt. But at the same time, like, I don't feel like the need is there to add someone based on who is available in the portal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Tech starts 4-2 and then Drones gets hurt and Watson finishes the season 2-4, and you're just like, well, that was always probably going to happen if Drones gets hurt. So, I think, and then you've got a pretty good read on what you have in Watson.
I'm just saying, tell it to the University of Texas that no one wants to sit. But who knows? I mean, honestly, like, again, Pop Watson wasn't like a totally unheralded recruit. He might not be as good as Kyron Drones, but he was sought after by Power Five football programs. It's now going to be multiple years into this thing. You'd hope he could keep it afloat, at least to some extent, given Tech's schedule. But obviously, with where expectations are heading into 2024, that is a situation that no one wants to see come to fruition. The only time we want to be seeing Pop Watson, Dylan Whitkey, or anyone else is in garbage time, winning 50-0.
Or in the spring game where Pop Watson had his 39-yard touchdown that everyone remembers and will bring up.
Yeah, check out Doug's article on that run coming out soon.
It was a pass, wasn't it?
Pass, run.
Oh, yeah,
and run. It's a detailed article. Okay.
You're losing me on individual plays from last spring game. We've been through a lot since then.
That's fair.
The last plays I remember, as far as I go back, are the big runs that Rutgers broke off. Because that was
you don't remember the Xavion Turner Bradshaw reverse that didn't score a touchdown against Pittsburgh?
Rutgers was before Pittsburgh. I do remember that.
Oh, okay, great.
There we go. either way, speaking of reverses, plays where people are running the ball, the running back room.
This might be short.
This might be a short one. Any reason to expect anything different than what we saw last year?
No. I'm curious how much they're going to play Bashal Dutton this spring. Like, how much is he going to do? I mean, he doesn't need to practice outside zone all in March when the season is 6 months away. So, like, put him in bubble wrap and make sure, you know, I think they were talking a little bit about he needs better conditioning. You don't need to practice in a maze of legs and potentially turned ankles and knee twists. So that's what I'm curious about with Tootin at the top of the depth chart.
I think the biggest thing with the running back room is, like, credit to the staff for keeping Malachi Thomas. Like, I think, you know, when you have two guys that could potentially, you know, we were talking before the season, 1A, 1B, like it was very clearly one and two as the season progressed. But a guy, you know, that could definitely play elsewhere, you know, they're definitely feeling good in that room. And I think, you know, gone are the days of the 12 scholarship quarter running backs. Like, we don't have to worry about that anymore. We have a condensed, nicely assorted running back room. I think it'll be interesting to see who the number three guy is. All that being said, like, whoever that number three guy ends up being, they might get a carry every third game. Like, it's largely going to be Tootin two series to one series to Malachi Thomas. Like, expect nothing different this year. I think, you know, they really want to showcase Bashaul Tootin in different positions, like different scenarios, whether he's catching more out of the backfield. But I mean, he's absolutely going to get the most touches this year. I think they're really trying to put him in a position where, you know, he could hear his name called in the NFL draft.
Yeah, the third running back spot is the obvious, like, position battle of this group to watch. Not for 2024, but for 2025 with Coney and Treylon Mitchell and then the early enrollee Tyler Mason there. But like Matei said, you're not going to get much, or if that person plays much, something's gone wrong, or Tech is, like Andrew said earlier, Tech is beating people 50-0, and you might as well. Coney, probably the leader in the clubhouse after last season for that role. But I also agree with what Matei was saying about expanding Tootin's skill set. I think is probably what they're going to focus a lot with him on in the spring, especially in the passing game. I also think Tyler Bowen mentioned last year, it was probably just lip service given how little it happened, but putting them both on the field at the same time. And I think if you look at the way Tech's skill position, top end skill position sets up with Jennings, Lane, Felton, and Tootin, like that fifth spot is going to be a Swiss Army knife of possibilities. And I think Malachi Thomas on the field instead of a tight end or an extra wide receiver is certainly something they're going to play around with, especially this spring.
I mean, conceptually, it's certainly interesting just seeing how Tech's offense really evolved between, like, you know, the Rutgers game and every play that they'd ever played under the prize staff before. Now they have a full offseason to think of creative, tricky things to do. I'm really curious to see what new concepts and looks are implemented. And I doubt that, and not to spoil it for anyone, but probably not going to get too much of that in the spring game.
No.
But at the same time, you know, hopefully we don't have to see a lot of it against Vanderbilt. Hopefully you can just, you know, run the standard sets and get out of that game unscathed. But the first time Tech faces legitimate competition throughout the season, you can
watch out, Rutgers.
Yeah, as I say, Rutgers. Rutgers is what sticks out, not to claim victory over Vanderbilt or anyone else before.
Jerry kills Vanderbilt, man. That's the disrespect.
That's so true. That's so true. I mean, maybe it's wishful thinking. I hope it's not.
That kill
Texas should be able to roll Vanderbilt.
Kill knows a thing or two about bland Virginia Tech offenses.
Fair enough. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what looks get implemented, you know, not only in the spring, but in the fall as we head into 2024. Now, last position group we have to look at here before we touch on our various news and notes is the wide receiver room. It's amazing what a year will do, right? Or just a full calendar year, because we go from so many question marks following one of the I mean, at least in my 2010 and beyond memory, 2022 was the worst Virginia Tech wide receiver room that I can remember. Now we look at 2024 as a chance to be the best wide receiver room in recent memory, perhaps even of all time. We know that we're going to see Jennings, and we know that we're going to see Lane and Felton. Insert Steven Gosnell in there somewhere along the line, I guess. But it's the young guys that Fontell Mines has been able to bring in behind them that make me the most interested, because there's only room for so many snaps, consequential or not. So talk about who's in the mix for a little bit of playing time there, and what names interest you the most.
Yeah, assuming Steven Gosnell gets back in the fall fully healthy, you're looking at the fifth receiver probably in terms of snaps and targets is up for grabs. Aiden Green played a ton at the end of last year, is the leader in the clubhouse there. You kind of got a competition at the backup slot receiver with Xavion Turner-Bradshaw and Take Heath. A very small role there. Like, you're not taking Jalen Lane out of the game very much in that role, but and Turner Bradshaw kind of had that role already last year and played very, very limited snaps. And then you have a guy like Chance Fitzgerald, who redshirted last year. And then the two true freshmen, Keelan Adams and Chance Wiggins, who early enrollees could get in the mix. You know, I think coaches tend to inflate how many receivers they're going to use during the offseason. I always think back to Justin Fuente repeatedly telling us that he's going to play, or he wants to have eight receivers. When in reality, you're not going to take if you're taking your top three receivers off the field, you're just willingly playing lesser talented receivers. So like five is going to be a small role. Six is going to be even smaller, but those are what you're competing for at the second level. It's kind of the same situation as the offensive line in that there is now a lot of experience at the top of the depth chart, and there's this like underbelly of developing young talent that there may just not be that much playing time for. Like, Chance Fitzgerald may develop and be the number six receiver and barely play in 2024, which is a interesting challenge to have. It's definitely the problem you want to have, but you know, especially in this day and age in the portal where guys are looking for playing time early and will leave quickly to pursue it. Like, that's going to be interesting to see how Fontell Mines handles it. I think there'll be plenty of snaps this spring available. Jennings probably needs to knock off some rust, but he's in his sixth year. He's a finished product. Jalen Lane's a finished product. Daquan Felton, probably the one guy that returns a lot of production that feels like he has a lot of untapped potential left to develop. But, you know, they'll balance his workload too, I feel like. So kind of the same deal as the running back room in that case, and where you have a lot of returning production and you're going to try and balance like getting them the work they need to get better themselves a little bit and to stay fresh and be a part of the offense and all that stuff. While also, like, you don't, like, Ollie Jennings doesn't need to come out and put and have every single number one receiver rep in March.
Yeah. And just a couple more points is like the bad boys, the four guys that all decided to come back. I don't know how much we touched on it, you know, in our last podcast together, but like, huge kudos to the staff for being able to retain all of them, not just like three out of four or two out of four. Like, those are the guys that are all coming back for a reason. They're all coming back to be on the field pretty much the entire game. You know, there are other guys, like, you know, I was wondering, what would a guy like Tucker Holloway do? Like, he's been so successful on punt return, and that's probably going to be his role for a third straight season. But he's also someone that, you know, has game-breaking speed, could be a big play threat, someone that you put in, you know, on a vertical route you know, once in a while in the game. So I think they have options in that room. You mentioned some of the younger guys like Chance Fitzgerald. Aiden Green was a guy that got a lot of reps and, you know, surprisingly was a very good blocker, which they take a lot of pride in for the run game. So, you know, there will be roles for guys that are in the fifth and sixth slot. I think it'll be interesting to see when Steven Gosnell will come back. Like, obviously he'll be healthy, but will he be game ready by week one? Or is a guy like Aiden Green gonna, you know, take the same role that he had last year? So definitely a lot of, you know, this is the deepest position group on the entire team. I like what Andrew said. It's probably the most talented from top to bottom that Virginia Tech's wide receiver room has ever been. And then lastly, you look at the, you know, the key guys that came in. I think, you know, Brody Adams, definitive four-star. Chance Wiggins got elevated late to a four-star. Like, legitimate talent, both top 10 guys in Virginia. And I think the cool thing about them is that this communication of, you guys probably won't see the field freshman year, was like already discussed. Like, these are guys that know their role, know they're coming in to learn. And so I don't expect to see any, you know, last year we saw like Key Heath playing one, he played one snap against Rutgers, like, understand he got hurt, but like maybe they get a snap or two on the season, like Chance Fitzgerald as well. But overall, I think it's going to be very top heavy and you're not going to see a lot of those promising talents outside of the spring game.
And there you have it, folks. Your spring practice preview. Want to segue a little bit here to the men's basketball side. Virginia Tech not going to make the NCAA tournament. I guess you can never say never. Everyone makes the NCAA tournament. You just got to win your conference tournament to get there. But everyone's in the tournament. But assuming that doesn't happen, a relatively disappointing season for the Hokies. You look online, a lot of people have started to sour on Mike Young, you know, now a couple of years removed from that historic ACC tournament win. The question I get asked all the time, is Mike Young on the hot seat going into next season? I guess barring a miracle here. What say you guys?
Yeah, going into next year, absolutely. I think there's a case you could make to move on from Mike Young after this year. I don't think they'll do it, but I'm kind of in that spot where, you know, I could justify it either way, and it wouldn't surprise me either way. I think how basketball is these days in terms of how quickly you can kind of turn over a roster. You look at like what Jeff Capel did at Pittsburgh this year, where he was like dead in the water and was like had the worst program in the league for several years. And then, you know, I think they're at 20 wins this year. I don't think they're going to make the tournament, but they're at least decent enough. So I think that plays a factor in like sticking with Mike Young. And then I think there's a whole other financial decision of whether you're wanting to spend millions of dollars to buy out Mike Young at the same time you're trying to spend millions of dollars on certain other sports to boost those. So those definitely play a role. I don't think Mike Young has recruited well enough or acquired talent well enough, and that's a multi-year trend. His best player is Hunter Couture, who he brought from Wofford 5 years ago. Padula is the only other starter he recruited. So he's relied heavily on the transfer portal and it just hasn't worked out. And even his high school recruits haven't even been that good. So in terms of like, it's time to move on. You can make that argument that aside from the run and the finish to that one season a couple years ago, like the talent level has just not been there. But, you know, I also see it the other way where he's clearly a good coach. Like he's a very competent X's and O's coach and has won a bunch of games and can win a bunch of games. And it's not going to take that much in basketball to like put together a decent bubble team. So I think it just is a kind of, it's a toss up at this point, but definitely on the hot seat heading into next year.
Yeah. I would definitely say that, you know, the seat warmers are on a 1 out of 3 right now. Like, it's starting to heat up a little bit, obviously. Like, it's crazy, you know, to have that conversation. Like, this is the first time, like, we're addressing it, because we obviously haven't spoken too much about basketball. But, like, you know, it was 2 years ago that, you know, Virginia Tech won the ACC tournament. And here we are now. I think Doug mentioned it, like, recruiting has been a big part of it. You know, bringing in three transfers, Baran, Nickel, Long, like, none of them have really panned out into guys that, you know, are, they're all rotational in a way. Like, they all have deficiencies. No guy really stepped in and was the guy. And I think, like, we did mention in a previous podcast, but, like, the hope was one of those three guys would really develop into, you know, an all-around guy. And I just don't think that happened this year. Like, there have been some good things with Lynn Kidd and his explosion and being able to be consistent and having a good front court big man. Padula has been inconsistent at times. And, you know, I think there is potential for next year. Ryan Jones coming in, like, very well-regarded recruit. I think he could turn around that conversation of identifying high school talent. But overall, I think it's a combination of you lost some important pieces. You had, you know, some consistency in the backcourt. But overall, like, the transfer portal additions just weren't good enough. So definitely, I think, you know, deserves another chance to see what, you know, which guys he can bring in via the transfer portal. If, you know, they can get some more successes there, you know, adding guys like Ryan Jones, as I mentioned, for next season, I think there is potential there. So the seed is getting warmer, but it, you know, it still is crazy to say 2 years after, you know, that we're already starting to have these conversations, but, you know, it was a disappointing season. So I totally get it.
Yeah, I mean, like, from my perspective, I have a hard time believing they could can him after this year, just given Virginia Tech's history as a basketball program and, like, the tournament up until the last decade has really tended to be the exception to the rule, and Hokies are kind of playing where they've been, and the guy has a couple NCAA tournament appearances, which is, you know, outside of Buzz Williams. Who, you know, two is a lot on that leaderboard for Virginia Tech. But at the same time, you can't go 0-4, right, on your big name recruits. The transfer portal is a beautiful thing. And Mike Young was, you can't call him lucky, but he did an excellent job of bringing in his Wofford players / Wofford recruits and making the most out of them and putting together a team that was, I mean, ACC championship worthy, call it what it is. It's what they want. But going back to the well time after time after time as Virginia Tech, when it comes to the transfer portal, you're bound to miss every once in a while, right? Like, there's a reason these guys aren't standing pat at the school that they started. They're either dudes who played well at a lower level or guys who played at a higher level looking for a new home. Either way, that's a good way to supplement your roster, which should be filled with a decent amount of homegrown talent that, you know, Mike Young has reeled in, but almost without exception has been unable to keep and develop. And if he has a downfall, and we're telling the story of what went wrong, that will almost certainly be it.
So. I think, as it relates to this whole thing, I think about what Virginia Tech wants its basketball program or where Virginia Tech sees its basketball program. And to me, it's very clearly behind the football program. So you got to decide, like, what are you striving to be with that? And if you look at a school like Clemson, is probably where you want to be, right? Power, like, football is king. Football is the powerhouse. And they're fine with Brad Brownell, who's been the coach there for like 14 years, and he's made three NCAA tournaments. Hasn't made it to the Sweet 16 once, lost in the first round two other times, and he's basically just been a good enough coach to put him on the bubble most years, but then also have some down years. And you know, I think Virginia Tech at a certain point, whether it's this year or after next year, makes a decision of like, yeah, that's good enough for men's basketball because we're going to pour everything else in the football program. An occasional NCAA tournament team, a rare like second weekend team. And if we go, you know, 23-11 one year and we make the NIT, we're fine with that. If we go 17-16 one year and we aren't in the postseason at all, that's fine too, as long as it, you know, you just kind of you're kind of fine living in Mediocreville and living on the bubble because it's your basketball program and you'd rather divert the resources to football to be better at that.
Yeah. And I think like outside that one Sweet 16 run against Duke and Ahmed Hill, if he just made that shot, you know, you're talking about like a perennial 8-9 seed losing in the first round, but making it. Obviously, the other exception being 2 years ago when they won the ACC tournament, that, you know, I think bought a lot of grace there. I think expectations were big for the tournament, but I think they lost in the first round pretty handedly to Texas that year. So, like, I think the goal is just to be in the conversation. Like, as of now, you would want, like Doug was saying, like, you want to be on the bubble. You want to, you know, occasionally have that run where, you know, you're a solidified tournament team, but I think like you need to consistently be there before your aspirations go up even more. And you know, so far it seems like it's very hit or miss, and definitely like, I don't know, I still feel like with Mike Young, that's still the vision. Like this year was definitely supposed to be an NCAA tournament year, and they fell short because, you know, transfers didn't work out, variety of reasons, but you know, I still think that's the trajectory of this program under Young.
When you talk about like finances, it's like, do you want to not pay Fontel Mines, Derek Jones, and spend a quarter less money on the recruiting budget in football, or do you want to like pour that money into basketball to try and be on the right side of the bubble? It's like, I think you get into, especially at this stage of the NCAA and college sports and all the uncertainties, I think the priorities are pretty clear in terms of where you're comfortable spending for success and what level of success you want.
I don't disagree. One thing I will note, though, is that, and I think what maybe has fans kind of shaken up a bit, is that from year two of Buzz Williams, January, right? So if we do a little time machine, year one was obviously terrible. Buzz had inherited a bottom of the conference program from James Johnson, now with the football program. Either way, I can't say that with a straight face. Either way. Poor first year, Bibbs, Hill, those guys were still, as freshmen, kind of the centerpiece, struggled in the beginning of year two. Non-conference loss to Alabama State. Get into ACC play, turn things around, finish around 500, stay competitive. NIT win over Princeton. Huge turning point for the program. And from there until, I would say late January, February of last season, Virginia Tech basketball has always, from start to finish throughout the year, been compelling. Because even in year one of Mike Young, you're giving him the pass. And of course, that was a team that, with Landers Nally in that first game under Mike Young, I believe in Maui, beat Tom Izzo and number one Michigan State.
That was Clemson. That was the year they beat Clemson to start.
Oh, they beat Clemson first.
And then they went to Matt. Yeah.
Either way, things got off hot. You kind of felt like anything could happen. And it was the COVID year anyway. Things were weird. Or going into the COVID year. They missed the NCAA tournament because there was no NCAA tournament. Who knows what the committee would have done if given the opportunity to put a 500 Virginia Tech team.
Who knows?
Yeah. Can't say we missed it. It didn't happen. Either way, though, basically since things fell apart midway through last January. And I mean, it was relatively obvious early on this season. This team pretty much just ain't it. They've had good wins and they've showed potential. But for myself and just surrounding myself with the Virginia Tech athletic fan community, the interest level just isn't there. And, you know, it's part because of the team's performance. It's partially because when a team's not performing and it's filled with guys that you didn't know of 200 days ago, it makes it even harder. But something's going to have to turn around in a hurry for this team going into next year, because I don't think Young's on the bubble this year, but I think that – or the hot seat, excuse me. But a poor performance next year and he's either out or he's really – you know, getting a lot of questions asked about his job security. And you can't lean on the good old boy from Radford persona, you know, through three or four straight missed NCAA tournaments. You probably just can't, in my opinion, at least. But moving on to a team that will definitely make the NCAA tournament, Virginia Tech women's basketball. Since we last spoke, just absolutely went on a, they've steamrolled the conference for like a month and a half. It was great. Lost a couple recently. They'll be the number one seed in the ACC tournament. As of now, at the time of this recording, we do not know about the status of a young woman who could be considered to be the greatest athlete in the history of Virginia Tech. And that's Elizabeth Kittley. First of all, for me, I've just been juggling the emotions of the fact that this might just end that way, and that we'll never know. You know, if they had a chance to go to the Final Four again or even further at full strength, I don't care if they've lost a couple of games here and there. This Virginia Tech team could stack up against anyone on any day, but that's going to require the star. So I mean, I guess, have you guys heard anything would be my question. And do you agree with the sentiment that, you know, a Final Four appearance or anything resembling that, regardless of how talented Georgia Amor is probably out of the question if Liz doesn't come back?
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, reading into it way too much, but... It's been very quiet on the Kittley front, but she did make a little bit of an appearance, and it doesn't seem, again, reading into it way too much, it doesn't seem like she's completely shut down. She was kind of speaking like, whatever my role is, I'll accept that. So it's definitely not a good update, but it's not like that, you know, we're never going to see her again. I think there's an ability for her to play, albeit very limited. And I think even with her less than 75%, Final Four is extremely tough. Like you mentioned, three-time all ACC player of the year, back to back to back. Like you lose that, any other team in the nation. Like if Iowa lost Caitlin Clark, they're not making it out of the first round. So it's tough. Obviously, as a Virginia Tech fan, like this was the breath of fresh air that, like, against all odds, like every other team, there's always been something where, oh man, like they had it until they didn't. And this seemed like, you know, the perfect story. You know, I was dreaming of the day that they would face off against Iowa again, potentially in the Final Four, and finally the Caitlin Clark media coverage would die down with a Georgia Amor step back three to seal the game. But, you know, now I'm in wait and see approach. Like, I don't even care about the ACC tournament, to be honest with you. It's almost like if Kittley has a chance of playing in the NCAA tournament by resting her an additional game, like it's almost like you take that even though you're the one seed. So, like, it's gotten to that point. The theories are going crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for the record, I don't think that at this point, even an ACC tournament victory, given the two losses that Virginia Tech just experienced, would lock them into a one seed. So I feel like you just kind of got to hope that you have your best possible roster going into the tournament. I don't know enough about the other teams at the top. It seems like South Carolina might be very, very good. I'll take Judging Iowa that. Again. I saw us play Iowa. We could have beaten Iowa.
Yeah, 100%.
It just comes down to matchups and seeding and all that stuff. But I know that there's no place Taysis and Doug Bowman would rather spend an afternoon, or should I say maybe early evening in early April, in Cleveland, Ohio, watching Kenny Brooks and his team in the Final Four.
I've looked at it. It's 8 hours from Richmond. Definitely doable. But overall, I think you guys covered it. It was really interesting. I was at the UVA game on Sunday night, and she makes the layup and one to give Tech the lead back. Place is going wild, and then doesn't get up. I was behind that basket, so you couldn't really see what was going on, and it took a while to register the severity of it. And then, I mean, the whole rest of the game was back and forth and intense and just a great experience. But, like, you kind of spent half of it keeping an eye on Kitley on the bench and, like, her parents and, like, just, like, trying to read any kind of thing. And then you're thinking, like, God, if my career just ended and the season just, like, went up in smoke with a knee injury, I feel like I wouldn't be as composed as she was. So you read into that. So, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they play it. I saw David Cunningham throwing out they're Jordan Travising it a little bit in terms of if you just say that she's out for the year, that gives the committee reason to drop your seed. If you just say she's day to day and she's working on and she's coming back, you can message that and kind of retain your seeding. And, if you make it through the first round of the NCAA tournament, or you make it through the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. So say Tech's a 2 seed or a 3 seed, they beat a 14-15 and then they beat a 6-11 or 7-10. The Sweet 16 doesn't start till March 29th. So, like, what's that? 3-4 weeks from now. So we'll see how they manage it going forward. I think there's the possibility she's out for the year and they're just not saying it. She's obviously not fine. Otherwise they would come out and say that too. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they manage it over the next couple weeks in terms of how, you know, when she's going to play, maybe a little like Justin Robinson effect of when he was kind of coming back and trying to come back at the end of, what was that, the 2019 year. It is unfortunate that it threw this whole wrench into the end of the season, which really should have. I mean, it was up until then just a celebration of what they've done and how good they are and what their mission for this year was, which was clearly to make it back to the Final Four.
Last thing I'll say, I think we have a work assignment for our guy, Colby Crawford. We'll try to get Liz Kitley to do the drill field dialogue. If she can cross the drill field, we'll know her status. So Colby Crawford, the ball is in your court.
If Virginia Tech wants to send a message to the NCAA selection committee, they will put Kitley on the drill field dialogue and show that she can make it across the drill field.
One thing I will say, you know, Colby is the jack of all trades for this news organization that is VT Scoop 24/7 Sports. And he has a lot of talents, to which I say, if Liz Kitley comes back, Hokies go to the Final Four, Colby is going to be in charge of driving the VT Scoop 24/7 Sports company van.
I'm good with that.
As we road trip to Cleveland.
Is he coming to pick you up at Charlotte first and then circling back around?
We'll figure out the route. But Colby, I'll buy your ticket to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, buddy. I'll tell you, folks, what happens in the back of the VT Scoops 24/7 Sports company van is, if you've seen The Last Dance, it's reminiscent of the Chicago Bulls team plane. You know, just a lot of horsing around, if you will, fun and games. Subscribe for a chance to be a part of it. But we were at an hour and like 4 minutes here or something like that. So, gentlemen, any final thoughts before we jump off? Next time around, I'll come prepared with information about Middle Tennessee's offseason and whatnot.
It's big.
Defensive preview next week.
Yes, defensive preview next week. That will likely record on Monday or Tuesday. As Matei knows, I am flying to New York to help him move.
Need all the hands I can get.
Bring in the van, too.
Yeah. I'm really just escorting Colby there.
Right.
But nonetheless, think about this. The drill field walk, but on Fifth Avenue.
Now we're talking.
Inside the tunnel, VT Scoop 24/7 Sports, folks. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe. Go back, listen to all those interviews. We worked very hard. A lot of people not sleeping to try to get you this news. So take what we give you. Tell us how you like it. Leave a review. Of course, get that VIP subscription to the site. We are coming up on football season. Football season has essentially started. That is what is being represented by our little podcast hiatus coming to an end. So plenty more content for you in 2024. And we hope you hang here with us. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Hokies.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.